This is The Guardian.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Politics Weekly Extra. I'm Jonathan Friedland. It is nearly 10 months ago that I, along with people all over the world, switched on our TV sets to see some rather shocking scenes that had unfolded and were unfolding in real time in Washington, D.C. It was the storming of the Capitol. You remember that day, there were just 14 days left on the Trump presidency. This was the day where, with some ceremony, Joe Biden would have his election as president confirmed. There was a process to go through on Capitol Hill. Outside was Donald Trump and his supporters protesting what they called the steal. They wanted to stop the steal. And those people gathered at the rally then turned and walked to Capitol Hill and stormed the building, breaking in, breaking down doors, breaking down windows, pushing and hurting police, and posing what seemed at the time a mortal threat to those within in their bid to overturn the verdict of the 2020 election. Well, it was called very soon an insurrection. There was an attempt to remove Donald Trump, even in his final days as president, over it. But in the months since, there has been an investigation trying to get to the very bottom of what happened and who is to blame. Well, this week, things have started hotting up a bit with this investigation, both in terms of who they want to speak to and who perhaps they are speaking to behind the scenes. We'll be getting into all of that with somebody who is following the committee's movements with great intensity. And that is someone who was there that day, someone who thought he was in fear of his life. And that is Congressman Eric Swalwell. Now, Eric Swalwell represents California's 15th congressional district. He's a Democrat, and he was in the chamber, in the House, on that infamous day. He is so determined to hold Donald Trump to account for what happened that he has personally attempted to sue the former president and some of his aides in federal court for the crime of incitement, inciting the mob on that day. So I began my conversation with Eric Swalwell by asking him what he remembers of January the 6th, 2021.
We heard the mob before we saw the mob. And again, on our phones, we could see them, you know, breaching the different perimeters and then entering the Capitol. And about simultaneously, a security officer told us that we needed to take out our gas masks from underneath our chair and to take them out and be ready to put them on in case the mob came into the chamber and the police had to disperse tear gas. Now, the second part that was also alarming was that, you know, we were told, you know, to be prepared to duck in case there was gunfire coming into the chamber. And it kind of just escalated from, is this really happening, to, oh shit, like we should actually start to think about our own security inside the chamber. I messaged my wife because I feared that, you know, I may not be able to ever message her again. And so I sent her a note that I love her and the kids and to hug them for me. And, you know, that's not a message you want to send ever. I didn't know if I was going to have another opportunity to message her.
Yeah, no, I can hear in your voice. This was a traumatic event, and it all happened so fast. I mean, just on the day, but also the timeline, because, of course, the 6th of January was just 14 days left on the term of President Donald Trump. His presidency would end on the 20th. And you and your colleagues who then got involved in fast-tracking a second impeachment of Donald Trump on the grounds of incitement, and that went through the House, and obviously it fell in the Senate, where he was acquitted, just because you require a two-thirds majority there. I know that you then decided, along with others, to sue him for inciting the violence in your kind of a separate lawsuit rather than the impeachment procedure. Can you tell us what happened with that?
Well, I deeply believe that he needs to be held accountable for inciting, assembling, and aiming the mob at the Capitol, as well as some of the others who, you know, were kind of co-inciters with him that day. It's early in the litigation, but after putting together the impeachment case in the Senate, I was convinced after reviewing hours of video footage, and it was quite clear to me that the president had foreknowledge that violence would occur, himself had incited it and stoked it, and then dropped the match, of course, at the Ellipse, and even implied that they had permission to do it because he was going to be with them when he told the crowd, "I'm going to the Capitol with you," which again shows solidarity. And I think conveys and projects to anyone in that mob that we can do it. We can do this because the president is physically and emotionally with us. And so I was just convinced that he was responsible.
Donald Trump and his team, of course, deny that account of events and the notion that they were, or that he was, directly involved in any kind of incitement. Nevertheless, the action has moved away from the initial impeachment process and other actions to the work of a select committee, which is now there in Washington, D.C., but on Capitol Hill, trying to get to the bottom of those events of January 6th. Just explain to us exactly who is on that committee and how they were chosen.
Many questions regarding the circumstances of this assault on our democracy and the response to it remain. It is imperative that we seek the truth as to what happened. To do that, we believe that a bipartisan commission would be the best way to proceed in the spirit of patriotism and bipartisanship.
So, you know, it's a relatively small committee, mostly made up of the relevant committee chairs in the Congress. Benny Thompson, who chairs the Homeland Security Committee, leads this overall effort. Adam Schiff, who was the first impeachment manager, you know, lead manager, also on the committee. Zoe Lofgren, who oversees the House Administration Committee, which oversees the Capitol Police, and the Sergeant at Arms, also on the committee. And then Jamie Raskin, who was the lead impeachment manager for the second impeachment, is on the committee. And then a few of my other colleagues who, because of their national security background, are on the committee. And you know, the whole effort is to understand what happened and make recommendations that would make sure that a day like that never happened again. And to, you know, also really build out what we were not able to do in the Senate impeachment trial because of the pressures of time. We had witnesses who were going to tie us up in courts for years if we wanted to pursue their testimony. Well, the January 6th Commission, they're not bound to the same constraints that we were. And so they're able to move with a little bit more agility and patience that we didn't have.
And you mentioned a lot of the big names on there, but crucially, it's not all Democrats on this committee.
That's right. And actually, the offer the speaker had made originally was for it to essentially be a commission that would have co-equal subpoena power, essentially that, you know, Republicans and Democrats, if they agreed, it would take both parties to agree to have subpoena power.
Unless Speaker Pelosi reverses course and seats all five Republicans, we will not participate.
Republicans walked away from that deal. And really, and so thankfully, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, who've shown integrity throughout the whole process. They stepped up, and they are they're on the committee, and Liz Cheney is even the vice chair.
Yeah, so that prevents people being able to say, look, this is a partisan effort, even though it isn't quite the bipartisan, and I notice you using the word commission almost on sort of like the 9/11 commission. It's not quite that either, but it's not a wholly partisan thing because, as you say, there are those two important Republican Congress people there on that committee. So it's got time, and it can really pour over the evidence. It opened with this quite dramatic testimony from Capitol Hill police who described the day, the testimonies of four police officers, and we can just hear a moment of that.
I was aware enough to recognize I was at risk of being stripped of and killed with my own firearm. I was electrocuted again and again and again with a taser. I'm sure I was screaming, but I don't think I could even hear my own voice.
Well, since then, the committee had been quietly getting on with its work. But in recent days, it has come very much back into the news. Now, that's partly because of someone they wanted to talk to who wouldn't talk to them, the former chief strategist for Donald Trump, Steve Bannon. They issued a subpoena for him to come before the committee. He ignored that, refused to appear, claiming executive privilege, the principle which says it is confidential what a president says to his closest advisors. It happens to be that at the time, Steve Bannon was no longer working for Donald Trump. Nevertheless, Bannon claiming executive privilege, refusing to appear before that committee. The committee and now the full House has voted that that makes Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress. And that charge moves to the Department of Justice, where they have to decide whether or not to move to a prosecution. But also in the news because of reporting by Rolling Stone and others suggesting that what happened on January the 6th was planned, that there was a whole group of congressional aides who gathered together planning the talk of the Willard Hotel being a command centre for operations on January the 6th, all designed to overturn that Democratic election result. The Rolling Stone has spoken to a couple of congresspeople who've said, look, they themselves weren't involved. What, Congressman, do you make particularly of that reporting suggesting that a handful of congressional aides were involved behind the scenes in what we saw play out on January the 6th?
There's more to learn there, and that's why it's so important for the commission to exist. But what is particularly alarming was an allegation in the Rolling Stone story that Congressman Gosar was offering rally organizers blanket pardons. And, you know, you don't need a pardon for peaceful demonstrations in the United States, that peaceful demonstrations are allowed. So if he was offering pardons, you know, it really raises the question of what was the conduct that was going to be pardoned. And so we know violence took place that day. We know the president leading up to that day and on that day used charge language that suggested that, you know, violence would have to be taken to stop the steal, as he called it. So what type of pardons were being considered and what were the roles of colleagues of mine in doing that? And frankly, if anyone worked with the violent insurrectionist that day, they should be expelled from the body.
All of this reporting in Rolling Stone, actually they tried to make contact with Congressman Gosar. He was not available for comment. But their sources are these unnamed congressional advisers. And the one person they did manage to get on the record was Congressman Mo Brooks, who insisted that he had no involvement in the events on January the 6th. He was tied up working on other things. But he said when asked if any of his staff had been involved in planning the January the 6th rally, he said he didn't know, but quite frankly, I'd be proud of them if they did help organize a First Amendment rally to protest voter fraud and election theft. So not exactly distancing himself from that.
Yeah, Mo Brooks, plainly in his language on the 6th, was calling for violence and was prepared for violence in that he was wearing body armor that day. And again, you know, is not backed off of the words by giving his staff, you know, attaboys and, you know, projecting pride to them for any role they may have had. And that's in part why Mo Brooks is named in my lawsuit. And that's why this, the commission should do all they can to understand what his or his staff's culpability was on that day.
Let's say you are able to, or not you, but your colleagues are able to substantiate the various claims that have been out there and really point a very, you know, well-evidenced finger, accusing finger at members of Congress. What is the upshot of that? What accountability do you imagine being implemented if these people are guilty, as you and many Democrats believe they are?
Well, the public should know who was responsible for working with the mob on the 6th. So certainly for the sake of transparency and the sake of understanding, you know, one of the bloodiest days at the Capitol, the public has a right to know that. And then if there were members that worked with violent insurrectionists, they should be held to account for that. You know, we have a situation where January 6, 2025 could be just as deadly or worse. And so really understanding how we can inoculate ourselves from a day like that, in the future.
What Republicans say is that it's divisive to be going back over this ground and that, you know, what matters to Americans now is COVID or jobs or the economy, and the Democrats are just engaged in some kind of partisan point scoring exercise. Shouldn't we all move on?
With January 6th, we have done nothing in this country, other than arrest those who were responsible, which is, you know, credit to the FBI for the work they've done to arrest hundreds of people. But as far as the principal actor who's responsible for January 6th, Donald Trump is still out telling lies about the election and inciting and radicalizing Americans who live in a country with almost unrestricted weaponry as it relates to, you know, access to firearms. So I do fear that, you know, the temperature is only getting hotter. And the risk for another day like that at our capital or any capital across the country is growing.
Does it surprise you that most people, if you look at polls, believe that the body that you're a member of, the House of Representatives, will flip and move in a year's time from Democrats to Republicans? And that will obviously have a big impact on the investigation if it's still going on. But even just putting that to one side, the notion that Republicans, far from being held accountable, are not really paying a big price for this, that this investigation is rumbling on. And yet politically, it doesn't seem as if Republicans are paying much of a price for that.
Yeah, Jonathan, if you're looking at history, you would bet that the House is going to flip. But these are times that are defying history. And I really do believe that when this party has become a pro-insurrection, anti-science party in the midst of a pandemic and after the attack on the Capitol, they have disconnected themselves from mainstream America. And that's why I'm not as concerned about losing the House. But if you were just looking at history, without January 6th, without a pandemic, sure, I think that case could be made. But most Americans, I think, recognize these lies are literally killing us.
Yeah, no, look, from your state of California, I also wouldn't be worried about the midterms or any other elections. I take your point that Democratic governors have been recalled before, but broadly, that state is pretty blue. The worry is elsewhere in the country, and I don't think many people think it's controversial to suggest that the House is likely to fall, which does suggest that nationally, Republicans haven't paid a price.
Well, I would argue that, you know, they are in public opinion. And look, we saw in California when they tried to recall the governor. And yes, California is a Democratic state, but in the last 20 years, a Democratic governor has been recalled in that Democratic state. And we had a pandemic and we had homelessness issues and wildfires. But the Republicans put up the most radical candidates who all went all in for Donald Trump, who all supported his belief about the 2020 election being stolen. And it wasn't even close. And that's because the voters saw that for whatever concerns they may have had about Newsom, they were absolutely not going to turn the keys of the state over to any Republicans who were spinning lies about the election. And I think the same is going to play out, you know, as we go into the midterms.
So we're talking about midterms. That brings us obviously to the point about timing. What is the timeline for this committee's investigation? When do you expect it to wrap up and conclude? And will it be, you know, in time before this, you know, before there's a new Congress seated?
Again, you know, they're going to have to fight some of these individuals who refuse to show up and go through the subpoena process. And that'll take some time. But, you know, they are making progress. They're in a number of depositions. I would imagine that before the midterms, because, again, the threat exists that Republicans would not accept the outcome of the midterms, that the commission, you know, wants to make sure that we're inoculated going in to the midterms.
Congressman Eric Swalwell, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
My pleasure.
And that is all from me for this week. For anyone who wants something completely different to listen to, Grace Dent is back with a second series of her amazing Guardian podcast, Comfort Eating, where she invites a famous guest to throw open the cupboard doors and reveal their favourite comfort foods. You can listen back to this week's episode with the one and only Stephen Fry. It is a terrific listen. But for now, it's goodbye. The producers this week were Danielle Stevens and Esther Opoku-Jenny. And I'm Jonathan Friedland. Please stay safe out there. And thanks, as always, for listening.
This is The Guardian.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.